This is James R. Copeland, the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. And it's my pleasure to welcome today Adam Friedman to talk about the Supreme Court's significant ruling in Arizona v. United States, the case considering the constitutional challenge to the Arizona statute commonly known as SB 1070, which was enacted in 2010 on immigration issues. Adam is a contributor to Ricochet.com and also author of the forthcoming book, The Naked Constitution. So Adam, welcome to the Center for Legal Policy and our podcast today.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be on.
So what exactly did the Supreme Court do here? There were four, as I understand it, four different sections of this law that were being challenged. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals had enjoined those four. What did the Supreme Court do in its decision?
Well, that's right. There were only four sections of the law were at issue, although it's worth noting that the administration initially challenged every section of the law, but ultimately they focused on four. Ninth Circuit enjoined all of them, and the Supreme Court upheld the Ninth Circuit with respect to three of those four provisions. And with respect to one of them, which is Section 2B, the empowering the police to check the immigration status of persons who they detain for other purposes, that one they upheld, at least from a facial challenge, that the section could be vulnerable later down the road to what they call an as-applied challenge.
Sure. So this is perhaps the most controversial part of this law. This is when the police officers make a stop, they can detain somebody and inquire about their immigration status with the federal government. They said, at least based on the face of the statute itself, that passes constitutional muster. It's not in conflict with federal law. So what was the court's rationale on the other three provisions as to how those sections of the law conflicted with the federal law or were preempted by federal law?
Well, the way the majority reached its decision was by taking a very broad view of preemption. First of all, they weren't just talking about the federal power over naturalization, which is what the Constitution gives Congress, an exclusive power over naturalization. But the majority held that the federal government, by virtue of its power over foreign affairs, has to have this sort of all-encompassing power over the status of all aliens within our borders. And so it was, according to the majority, the other three sections conflicted with the federal government's ability to control the status of aliens within our borders. So those in those three sections, one of them had to, none of them created new immigration standards. They added penalties to what federal law already prohibits. So one section had to do with adding penalties to those who don't follow federal registration standards for aliens. The other one had to do with illegal immigrants who apply for work within the state. And another one which empowers local police to conduct a warrantless arrest of individuals who've committed a deportable crime. And in each of those cases, the court wasn't saying that it conflicts directly with immigration law, because in each case it was actually meant to buttress immigration law. But what was really shocking is that the court held that the federal government couldn't conduct its foreign policy power if states were allowed to adopt laws that might upset foreign governments or that might inconvenience foreign governments by having to track 50 state laws rather than simply having one-stop shopping and being able to go to the federal government. So the decision really had very little to do with the sort of fundamental structure of federalism. It had more to do with this imagined federal prerogative over foreign policy.
Yeah, that struck me as pretty strange. I'm not an immigration law guy, but I do know a fair amount about preemption, and I've covered it in the context of civil litigation. And just a few years ago, we had a major case, Wyeth v. Levine, where the court basically said, notwithstanding the very comprehensive regulatory structure of pharmaceuticals by the Food and Drug Administration, there wasn't preemption there. And they were applying conflict preemption. Now this is, I guess, at least in part, a field preemption decision. At least that's the way Justice Scalia certainly is characterizing the majority's opinion here. And it seems a little bit confusing. Yeah, but I mean, anything when you're talking about lawsuits against Bayer, where 90% of the costs, 90% of the sales are outside the United States, and 90% of the litigation's in the United States, that clearly implicates foreign governments too, right? I mean, it's a strange sort of. It's hard for me to reconcile the breadth of the preemption that the court's finding here with its rather narrow reading of preemption right. in some of its other recent cases. Am I missing something?
It's absolutely incoherent, and it's also internally incoherent, I would argue, because if you accept the majority's premise, which I don't, but accept the premise that the federal government has this particular power to, or a particular... an exclusive power to control how foreign governments might perceive us. They should have really struck down all four provisions, because the one they left standing is, as you said at the opening, you know, perhaps the most controversial: the ability of Arizona police to basically, you know, ask anyone for their immigration papers if they're stopped for, you know, whatever, jaywalking or, you know, whatever their offense is. And, you know, if you're really going to be consistent about this, they might as well have thrown, you know, all four sections out. And you're absolutely right as well that you know, the conflict analysis is conflict and field analysis. There's a bit of both in the majority, but it's very attenuated, because even though I'm not a federal immigration lawyer either, I've read enough to know that it's completely clear that federal law envisages and encourages a state role in enforcing federal immigration law. So there's not only is there no conflict, really the two levels of government are supposed to work together.
Interesting. And when it comes to this preemption, I mean, Justice Thomas in that Wyeth v. Levine case and wrote separately to say, I'm not going to ever imply preemption, because I think the justices just sort of pick and choose and there's no clear standard here. And Justice Scalia didn't do that, and he's dissenting on every section of the statute as well as did Justice Thomas, but for different reasons. Explain a little bit what Justice Scalia was trying to say.
Well, Justice Scalia was really making a very fundamental federalism argument. He starts, as I think is proper, from first principles, which is that the power of a state to control its own borders and to exclude aliens in ways that don't conflict directly with the Constitution is part of a state's inherent police powers. It was recognized in the very earliest days of the Republic, and there has been no change to the Constitution to deprive states of that power. And therefore, as a matter of federalism and Tenth Amendment law, that power still resides with the states. And compared with what states have been allowed to do in earlier years of our Republic, the Arizona measures are really comparatively mild. In the 19th century, New York had a policy where the mayor of New York, through his staff, could turn away anybody, any immigrant at the port of New York who they thought might go on what was sort of the 19th century version of welfare at that time. I mean, compared to that, this Arizona measure is you know, much more modest and clearly within a state's sovereign powers. And so that, I think, is the power of Justice Scalia's dissent. Justice Thomas has a straightforward preemption analysis to say that as a matter of plain reading, there is no conflict between the governing federal statutes in this area and the Arizona statutes, which, as I mentioned a moment ago, I think is absolutely also correct, because the federal statutes envisage a state role.
And now Justice Alito also dissented, and basically he said he thought three of the sections should survive, but one of them should be tossed out. What exactly was his analysis?
That's right. So Justice Alito would have agreed, or rather did agree with the majority, with respect to the preemption of Section 3, which is a statute which makes it a state crime, subject to additional fines and even possible imprisonment, for a person to be in the country without proper authorization, so without having done the proper alien registration procedures. That was the area in which the majority held there had been field preemption. And I think that, you know, in the case of something like registration, alien registration, one could argue that that's a very, that's sort of a procedural, administrative scheme that you can argue that is a complete scheme, that the federal government has preempted the entire field, and so he was, you know, Justice Alito is willing to go along with the concept of field preemption in that case. But with the other provisions at issue, he was, he also dissented.
Fascinating. So at the end of the day, then, what can we take away from this decision in terms of what it means for immigration law specifically, but also more broadly, what it means for federalism and how the court's viewing the state-federal balance?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a bad day for federalism. Unfortunately, there has been a trend going back for, you know, some decades, and it waxes and wanes, but there has been this idea that the federal government can invade state powers by using its foreign affairs prerogative. And the most sort of well-known example of this is the federal government using its treaty power. Now, with the treaty power, there's at least a more obvious tension. I mean, treaties are covered in the Supremacy Clause, and there's at least some question about whether a treaty can impinge on some aspect of state power. But here you don't have a treaty. It's not as though the United States entered into some international treaty that was ratified by the Senate that said you have to treat or not treat immigrants a certain way. Here, a court is simply speculating about why Congress might have been, might need to have exclusive powers here for the benefit of the executive branch's foreign affairs powers. I think that's a very dangerous road to go on. The president, notwithstanding his recent pronouncement giving a sort of quasi-amnesty to undocumented aliens, is not the person who's constitutionally empowered to make this policy. It's Congress is empowered to make immigration policy. So here you have the court construing Congress's power in a way that is meant to empower the president in foreign affairs. Very bad precedent, in my opinion.
Interesting. Well, again, it's my pleasure to have had you here with us today. This is, again, James R. Copeland, the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, with attorney Adam Friedman, a contributor to Ricochet, and author of the forthcoming book on constitutional law, The Naked Constitution. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Jim.